Welcome back. Here we are at the fifth installation of Freaky Fridays, an extension of my sound healing classes, Rainbows, Dreams, and the Space in Between. So this is, I believe, the conclusion of my Chakras and Octaves series. I have a little bit more to go through that will hopefully tie these few episodes together in very digestible chunks for you, because that's my aim. I'm going to continue speaking a little bit more about chakras here, but I think before I do so, it would be a good idea for me to kind of share a little bit of my history with you folks, because it kind of became the catalyst or the spark that kind of encouraged me and helped, you know, stoke those fires of passion for learning all this stuff and sharing all this stuff. When I was younger, teenage-ish, adolescent, pubescent, somewhere in that awkward range of existence, my psychic abilities became present and started to become manifest. With myself, it started with seeing auras. I would always see balls, floating balls around people, orbs, little blankets, little fuzzy halos all around all sorts of people. Started to pervade my dreams, and it started to become a very consistent part of my life. And I didn't really know what was happening, as most young teenagers feel. I had no idea what was going on. So when I kind of started talking with my family, my community, and the church at the time, I was met with cognitive dissonance. Many people around me had no understanding of what I was experiencing, and the concept itself was so foreign to them that the only way most people could quantify my experience was by labeling it as insanity. So, as a young man growing up in the Mormon church in Lethbridge, Alberta at the time, the appropriate course of action most people felt was to take me to psychiatrists. Those psychiatrists then deemed me as schizophrenic, put me on medication, on very heavy anti-dementias, and sedated my existence. So my reality was very sterile and very numb. And it took me a very long time to work my way out of this conditioning. It's created a lot of internalizing my own experience, because it made me not trust in myself. And I think that we have a very dangerous habit of mental attitudes towards what we deem as mental illness. I'm air quoting. I hope you could hear it with my voice, but mental illness. I feel that we very often label things we can't readily understand, and instead of taking an objective view and trying to put ourselves within someone else's sensory experience, it's easier for us to label things as wrong, as sick, as ill, because then we don't have to look at ourselves and the structures in which we allow this illness to exist. I think we accidentally suppress people often because their reality doesn't fit within the neat, tidy security we've developed around our own mental standpoint. And instead of trying to understand, it's easier to oppose. It's easier to reject. And that's where cognitive dissonance comes from. You know, we are introduced to thoughts that are outside of our understanding and experience. And it's very difficult and sometimes even painful to try and comprehend what that experience is like. But what became very beautiful for me was I began reading this book by Barbara Ann Brennan called Hands of Light, and she does aura and energy work. And it was really astonishing to read a book full of beautiful illustrations that showed almost identically things I had seen that I had thought it was only myself who could see. So it became very illuminating and very empowering for me to dig deeper into these latent psychic abilities that were present within myself. And I don't think I'm special. I think every individual, every human being, anything tethered to consciousness has the ability to access that psychic information, because it kind of refers to the cities that I was speaking about in the last episode, these portals that we could open up the conduits of energy and the expression of consciousness within ourselves so much that we were more open to different levels of existence and different realities that weren't readily available for the people who were not willing or able to open up their awareness to that specific extent. And we have found that consciousness can move faster than the speed of light, which is an insane concept to begin with. But if you can think about it, we're going to go outside next time there's a beautiful, bright, starry night. You can go and look at a star on one side of the horizon. And you look at this star, and you understand it has taken millions, if not billions, of light years. So light traveling at the speed of light, which is something crazy, like 144 points, something, 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 1,000 kilometers per second. I don't know. I'm sorry. That's very poor information. Really, really fast is what I'm trying to say. Light moves really, really fast for a whole year, and that's a light year, and it takes millions of those years for that light to hit our eyeballs. But within the time that it takes for my eyes to see that sun, I can then look to the other side of the night sky and look at an entirely different star. Between those two stars, the billions of light years that light had to travel to get to that distance, I can observe both of them within the fraction of a second. So if we think about it, there are constructs of reality and consciousness that move faster than the speed of light. And if those facets of consciousness represent themselves as the subtle energetic bodies that our chakras and our human energy field interacts with, we therefore wouldn't really be able to perceive these forms of energy, because they would be moving faster than the speed of light, and the speed of light is essential for us to observe reality around us. If anything moves faster than the speed of light, it moves outside of these spectrums which our eyes perceive and which our experiences of this physical body can understand. So we try to demonize and compartmentalize people who are different, who perceive reality on different levels than we do. And yeah, I feel like it's a really poisonous mentality that we have adopted. I have personally had the wonderful opportunity of knowing some autistic children, and we label them as sick or underdeveloped. But I think the majority of autistic children perceive reality in ways that our minds are not ready and willing to comprehend, and it creates friction. I mean, obviously this is a much wider and more difficult concept to tackle than I'm making it, and I apologize for my bias, but I think there's much more happening than we know. And before labeling someone as sick or ill, even ourselves, before you diagnose yourself with anxiety or depression, just remember it's quite possible you are perceiving currents of reality that are beyond other people's understanding and beyond other people's perception. I think you're just a superhero and you're having a hard time navigating through the density of the manifest world that we exist within. All right, there's a rant. There's the rant. So that's it's officially a podcast now. So Barbara Ann Brennan, she wrote this book. It's called Hand of Light. And she speaks very intricately about the human energy field. And she considers it the layers of energy that creates and interacts with our energy field. This energy field is expressed within 7 main layers to this field. The lowest 3 being the most dense and the highest 3 being the least dense. I notice that that's 6. We've excluded the heart because the heart chakra is different. The heart chakra and the heart electromagnetic frequencies kind of strangely exist everywhere, but I will get into that much later. So she observed that the first, third, fifth, and seventh, notice how they're all odd numbers, that those odd layers have a definitive structure to them, while the second, fourth, and sixth, or the even layers, were more fluid-like and less dynamic with their structure, and that these layers would blend and bleed into each other, and in doing so, they would share specific and unique expressions of information with each other. But because even though there are 7 layers, it's not separate like layers of an onion. Each layer is associated with a chakra, and each chakra has 7 layers to itself, which reflect the qualities of each independent layer. So I know that gets a little convoluted with itself, but it's really interesting. This is where the number 49 comes back. So we're on the 49th octave of the electromagnetic spectrum, which becomes light. And we have 7 layers to each of our 7 chakras. And they believe, or it's said, that upon your 50th year, you start the cycle back to the very first year you were born. So it's believed that you move through each of these layers of each of these chakras 1 year at a time. And if you want to get super esoteric, this actually has a very close connection to the orbit of Saturn and where your Saturn return comes back into play. So these vortices or these wheels interact with the energy of the universe. And to do so, these wheels or these bioelectromagnetic focal points need to be open to allow that flow to happen properly. So this is where the importance of terms we hear very often, like being heart-opened or having an open mind, come into play. It kind of almost literally relates to the ways in which we're allowing our bodies to interact with the energies around us. If you come into a situation close-hearted, you're not going to be able to receive that same quality of love, or close-minded, you won't be able to perceive that same amount of information. So when the chakras are open, the emotions and the consciousness associated with that energy metabolizes and it draws our attention to it. So this is where it can get kind of tricky because the psychological associations with these chakras, it becomes more active with our attention, which might be too much or too painful, especially if we have trauma or we have negativity or we have, you know, poisonous mind frames associated with these chakras or associated with these emotional states. Our mind does this very beautiful thing where if something is too difficult or too painful, it will reject it as a facet of our self preservation. It will be very difficult for you to look at things surrounded with trauma because your body physiologically knows that that trauma is painful, and so our mind will push those thoughts into our subconscious mind in an attempt to censor ourselves and hide ourselves from those painful concepts. And if that's allowed to run unchecked, these chakras can shut down. And if we shut down these energy currents, these bioelectromagnetic focal points, the energy becomes blocked and becomes stagnant. It's like a pool. It's like a pool in a mountain. We've got all this glacier water that as the seasons change, it melts and it flows down through the side and it cascades so beautifully into this nice, wonderful little mountain pool. And this pool usually has an entrance and an exit point for that flow of water to move through. But say over the winter season, a lot of tree and gunk and, you know, pollution and litter comes into that pool and it blocks the exit point, the water within that pool will become stagnant. And that's a really good analogy for our chakras. And actually, I was shown that analogy because a friend of mine was watching The Last Airbender, this funny little anime cartoon, and it explains the chakras. And so that was where my little metaphor for the running water through the pools came from. But the stagnation becomes harmful. So if it's allowed to run without being properly curated, this stagnation blocks that flow of energy, and our energy field isn't allowed to digest and interact with the energies around us properly and in a healthy way. And a lot of people believe that that is where all illness stems from, is just from the resistance to the natural flows of energy as we, as vessels of experience, move through it. So one of the things that's interesting to me, well, as you can tell, just about everything is interesting to me, but one of the things I find really cool is if thoughts and emotions carry a vibratory quality which can be felt, then thoughts and emotions have to exist somewhere in time and space, and not just in our imaginations. I think that's what becomes really interesting, is we have a tendency to think everything that's happening happens almost exclusively in our imagination and that it doesn't exist externally. But this is how you can pick up on vibes. This is how you can walk into a room where people had just finished fighting in, and you can feel that something went down. You don't necessarily know, but those exchanges of energy kind of stain the environment that they were expressed within. I've always had this running metaphor that everyone is a giant big ball of wet paint, and each person is a unique expression of every single hue and color and shade imaginable, and those colors are resonant within that person's root note of who they are as a fundamental individual or creature. And this huge ball of wet paint is sticky and it sticks to everything around us. You can picture yourself within a giant transparent egg. Everything you walk by gets splashed with this unique set of colors that your giant ball of wet paint is. And when you hang around people for a long time, your paint sticks to them and their paint sticks to you. And those relationships and connections that create the best colors are the people whose balls of wet paint are in resonance with you. Which is one of the reasons why I feel like we feel lost so deeply. If someone dies or someone is out of our life, there's a part of us that still feels that wet paint still sticking onto us before it's had an opportunity to dry and evaporate and be recycled into a different form of energy. And that's one of the things that I've always kind of felt. And we can kind of, everyone is just so different, but it's not that we're different. I feel a lot of the time we feel like we don't fit in because we're different, but it's not that you're different. It's just you haven't found the right balls of paint to match the color palette that will express your colors properly. Or even if you want to look at everyone as a series of different musical notes, you haven't found the right symphony. You haven't found the right tuning system that will allow you to resonate as beautifully as you can and will. So, all right, I don't want to wax poetic too much here. I'm going to go, I understand this is the third episode about chakras, and I haven't really even described the chakras. Part of the reason why is there is so much information about chakras. If this is in any way, shape, or form interesting to you, I would recommend you spend a night, smoke some pot, drink some tea or wine or whatever your process is. I'm not here to judge. Do whatever you want to do and just Google chakras. there's a whole lot of information and not everyone sees eye to eye. And I think a lot of that came from a lot of ancient humans. Just this was understood. I feel like this was inherent knowledge and we kind of fell away from that because we got a little bit more connected to our ego and our self-preservation as we did to unity. And in doing so, we accidentally lost a lot of this information. And through these oral traditions, there was a lot of misinterpretations that happened. And with anything, you should never take anything you hear at face value. That's just ridiculous. I feel like that's dangerous. Like even, you know, some of the things I say, it's very realistic that it's wrong or it's not correct for you. But with all knowledge, anything anyone says, take it in your heart first and see how it feels. And if it doesn't feel quite right, go research it. Go find more information. Your expression of reality is different. Your truth is different. We can have indivisible truths, but we can look at those truths from a different perspective and suddenly everything is wrong. And it's very real that everything we've ever been told is an entire lie. So who's to say what is or isn't? What I want to say is you are the only one who can decide what is true and what isn't. But if you approach every bit of information with an open heart and an open mind, you'll be able to discern and figure out your own representation of the same truth. We might have to use different words to express that truth, but that's the fundamental flaw of humanity. We are all prisoners to our own bias, and our own unique expression of life alters everything, so much so it's very difficult to see eye to eye without changing the verbiage around these terms. Okay, but here's a nice quick little overview of all of the chakras. So the seven main chakras all have their own independent qualities. So the Roy G. Biv or the ABCDEFG, well, it actually starts at C most of the time, but we don't need to get into the specifics. What I want to do is just give a really brief overview of the concepts and what I find the most important facets of the chakras themselves. I'm kind of trying to do a really basic comprehension so that I don't want to cloud your judgment and your understanding of what chakras are. I want you to, you know, feel this yourself. I want you to figure out what your chakras are yourself. So very first one is the root chakra or the Muladhara. Sorry, I'm going to pronounce all of these Indian and Vedic words very poorly. So the root chakra is located at your perineum, right in the Devil's Turnpike down there. And it's related to survival, security, and the physical body. It's associated with the color red. So the root chakra has, in the Vedic and the ancient East Indian belief structures, each of these chakras had a little flower associated to it. And the flowers all have different petals on it, and they have a different symbol in the middle. And usually there's different animals and different deities associated with all of these, and there are different definitions, and the Egyptians had a different take on it, and the Chinese had a different take on it, and the Tibetans had a different take on it. So there's a whole bunch of kind of conflicting standpoints, but it's all pretty similar. So the color red, so there were the four petals on the root chakra, and one of the things I found really interesting is there are a lot of mythological stories of creation where I think in Hinduism, it was Brahma, I believe, maybe Buddha, but Brahma, who created the world. And when he did, he came through a lotus flower, and that flower had four petals, which then pointed north, south, east, and west. And it was really interesting because a lot of creation stories deal with the initial creator then creating some facet of fourness. So I think that's where a lot of the representation of those four petals is associated. It's usually associated with the adrenaline glands or the adrenals. And some people also say it's associated with the reproductive organs, but I think the reproductive organs are a little bit connected to the next chakra, the sacral. But the seed syllable for the root chakra is the vowel like duh. It's almost the most rumbly and most guttural of noises we can make. So the next is the orange, the sacral chakra, the svadhisthana, which is located in the lower abdomen around the genitals or the sacrum. And one of the things that's really interesting, most folks kind of look at these energy centers from the front, and they consider that we just have these seven, which is not wrong. But we have polarity within that channel that that seven sits on top of as well. So we have a front and we have a back end. So we have a front chakra and we have a back chakra of the same thing. And it's kind of about giving and receiving in a sense. It's about the outward expression of the quality of the chakra and the inward expression. So both the root and the crown only have the one. So the root kind of faces down towards the earth, kind of down towards your feet, and the crown points right up to the sky, whereas the rest of them have a front and a back to them. So the sacral chakra controls our desire, our draw, our attraction, and creation. It deals with all of our sexual energy. And the more I research about sexual energy, it has a lot more to do with creation than it actually has to do with satiating orgasmic desire. We will get into the sacral chakra later. And part of the reason why I'm not going too deep into these is because I will explore them further later. So it's believed that the sacral chakra has, or the lotus connected to it, has six petals, and they control the reproductive organs. So the seed syllable for this is O, like rope. O, O. Moving up is the solar plexus chakra, the Manipura. And it's believed it's between the navel and the solar plexus. A really interesting tool you can use to kind of navigate your own body is there's a measurement. And what you can do is you can take your finger right to the tip of your nose and measure the distance in between the tip of your nose onto the bottom of your chin. And you take that, you know, couple inches, and that's the template. What you can do is, there's many more than these seven chakras, but these seven main chakras are kind of what it's about. And you can take that distance and you can measure it from your perineum, and you just kind of build on top. And if you keep that distance the exact same, you will hit every single chakra center along your body. So that's why a lot of the descriptions and belief behind where these exist is a little different, because a lot of people get confused with the several centers that exist within these seven main points. But again, we'll get much more into this down the road in the future. So the solar plexus, or the Manipura chakra, relates to self. This is the seat of the ego. It deals with the self, with your personal power, and it's related to boundaries. Mythologically speaking, the solar plexus chakra is related to the sun, and it's colored yellow. And one of the things that I found really interesting is there's a really nice parallel. If you think about the sun's role within our solar system, the sun is the focal point. It's kind of the key or the root note that our whole solar system operates around. So just like the sun is the focal point of our solar system, so is yourself the focal point of your own consciousness. And so this is kind of where your version of what's happening or who you are kind of exists. And as I was reading through a lot of the history behind this, the lotus flower associated with this has 10 petals. And those 10 petals represent spiritual ignorance, thirst, jealousy, treachery, shame, fear, disgust, delusion, foolishness, and sadness. I think that's 10. Yes. And these are all the qualities that we have to overcome and purify. We have to purify that facet of our ego and let go of our connection and addiction to those qualities so that we can move up this channel, the Shushumna Nadi with the Kundalini serpent, so that we can move into our heart chakra. So the vowel sound and the seed syllable associated with this chakra is oo, kind of like ew. No, wait. Yeah. Ooh. And another thing that's really cool is Manipura means place of gems. And as I keep mentioning, you are a beautiful little gem expressing energy through yourself. So the next is the heart chakra. It's green. It's called the Anahata chakra. It's located in the heart center. So not on your physical heart, which is very powerful and very important, but your heart chakra is right in the middle. It's right on that middle line there. It's got 12 petals on it, and it's associated with the thymus gland. But I'm going to explain the heart in great, great detail next time. That's the next topic for the series. So I know I'm blasting right past this heart one for sure, but I'm coming right back into a real strong, coming out swinging pretty quick. So the vowel sound associated with this one is It's already heart centering. I feel like it's pretty quick and easy to find that. Next is the throat, the Vishuddha chakra. It's located in the throat or around the Adam's apple area. It deals with communication, manifestation, purification, or expression. And the color is blue. And the lotus flower has 16 petals. And on those 16 petals are all of the Sanskrit vowels. And so every facet of expression is allowed through our throat chakra. And so even the ancients understood the power of expression and the power of how important communication is. And the seed syllable for that is A-Y-E. So up next is the third eye or the brow chakra, also called the Ajna chakra. This one's one of my favorites. I know you're not supposed to play favorites with chakras, but I kind of do. So this one's kind of interesting to point out. It's not in between your eyes. It's a little bit higher. It's kind of a, it's on your brow. And I'm sure you have seen many pictures of the yogi masters and a lot of the Hindu folk who have that red dot right on their forehead. And that red dot is, I believe it's called the Bindu point. And it represents a connection to one's intuition, to one's third eye chakra. And that third eye chakra deals with seeing, intuiting, knowing, comprehending, and understanding. Its color is indigo, so in between blue and purple. And it has two petals. And I couldn't find a ton of information as to why it's only two petals. But it says that it has a connection to do with the manas. And the manas is the mind, and so the mental landscape. As far as I can discern, the two petals might represent the two eyes that we have. And the third eye chakra deals a lot with what happens when we consume psychedelics. Sorry, Mom. I've done drugs that make my brain go crazy. But when we play with psychedelics, all of these wonderful, crazy visual experiences that happen and unfold right around us have a lot to do with the glands and the parts of our brain that interact with this chunk of energy being more opened. And then we can also interact with this specific part of our brain by altering our brainwave states, which we can do through breath or through sound or through meditation. And this is where we have access to that sudden knowing, those eureka moments or those downloads. This is how when one of our friends is trying to mask their true feelings, you can, quote unquote, I could tell so there was something up. I have a lot of my friends who get a little angry with me because sometimes they just want to be upset, but they can't hide it from me because I kind of can see how they're actually feeling. And this one is a little confusing as far as the endocrine gland goes as well. There's a little bit of disagreement. It's either the pituitary or the pineal gland. And one of the things that's really interesting about the pineal gland is as it's set up in our brain, it sits like an eyeball. So the pineal gland actually has photolight receptors within it. It has rods and cones identical to our eyes. And there's even actually like a bunch of hard material. I think it's not quite bone, but it's very bone-like encasing that pineal gland, almost like the eye socket encases the eyeball itself. So this part of our brain becomes more active when it's interacting with color and when it's interacting with light. And it's believed that the pineal gland has a very large role in consuming and digesting the energy that's found in sunlight and moonlight even as well. the seed syllable associated with the third eye chakra is I, U-I-E. And this allows us our access to astral travel and our imagination. And our imagination is very important. I think we have a tendency to believe that our imagination isn't real, or if we're imagining a thing, it isn't real. But that's not entirely true, because there's a really cool story about when Columbus arrived, a lot of the Native Americans apparently could not see the boats as they came up. They saw the little boats, but they didn't see the big, giant, walk the gang plank boats that they brought, because they had never had to conceptualize the image of a boat before. And so apparently it was like a shaman who, because he had been connected with that knowingness and with that imaginative realm, he had the capacity to observe beyond what his mind had created the necessity for conceptualization. And so once he saw these boats, he then told the rest of the tribe about it, and they began to see the boats. And so this conceptualization opened the doors to perception, and it was through that imagination that that became possible. So don't devalue your imagination. This is also believed to have a very large role in dreaming. And dreaming is something that's super fun for me. I've always been fascinated with dreams, and I have actively practiced dreaming deeper. And in doing so, I have some pretty intense and cool dreams now. And then I also relate this to the, I can't remember what Grecian dude said it, but I think, therefore I am. So the thinking and the thought itself might be a precursor to existence. Okay. Now we're going to move into the crown chakra, located right at the top of your head. Every single one of you is royal in my eyes. You're all kings and queens and or in everything in between. But whatever it is, you get to wear a crown because you're awesome. The Sahasrara chakra means thousandfold. And so it's believed that there are 1,000-ish petals. There's a lot of differing opinions on the amount of petals within there. But it represents connection, oneness, divinity, perfection, and infinity. It's believed that this is where the soul enters and exits the body. And even if you think about infants and children as they are growing, when they're first born, they have a soft spot where their skull hasn't developed. And it's believed that that's a vesicapiscus, and it is a portal. So it's believed that that is where the soul enters and exits the body, but pretty hard to quantize and definitively say for sure if that is the case. But it's believed that this is how we get our connection to our bliss, to our infinite joy, and again, might be controlled by either the pituitary or pineal gland. The seed syllable for this one is ee. You can get real high up in there. So there are tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of other systems. Not everyone agrees profusely as to what exactly this is, but it is pretty fundamental that it moves through seven. There are these 7 points. There are a ton of other systems which I don't have enough time to get into. I would love to be here for days and hours, but I have to go hang out with my friends because that's very important for my well-being. But there are many other systems of chakras and the ways in which energy moves through our body, like the Kabbalah, the Qigong, the meridian lines of acupuncture, Sufism, and the 7 Latif. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that very poorly. It's also believed that there are planetary chakras and that the planets themselves are the chakras for our galaxy. And it's believed that the planets individually have different chakras, like Mount Shasta, and the Grand Canyon are believed to be chakra points within the earth as a living functioning system as well. Lots and lots of speculation, but I encourage you to go and find your own definition of what all of these things are. There's tons of knowledge for you to draw upon and create your own understanding of what this all means. And and I forgot to mention the Tibetan warrior seed syllables are very similar, except they connect the crown and the third eye chakra and the sacral and the root chakra. And instead of going from the bottom to the top, they come from the top to the bottom. So starting with the crown and the third eye, the syllables ah, the throat is om, hung for the heart, ram for the solar plexus, and za for the DZA for the sacral and the root chakra. And so this is really cool for me because these chakras have seven layers within each individual chakra. And year by year, we move through and travel through each layer of individual expression, note by note, in a different key, color by color, in each and every hue imaginable. So it's kind of like on your first year, you're in your root chakra, in the root chakra point. Your second year, you go into the root, you're still in the root chakra, but then the sacral, and then solar plexus, and then heart, throat, third eye, crown. And that's your 7 years, and that 7 year cycle is complete. And after that, you move up into the sacral chakra, and you go through those seven layers again, one by one. So sacral chakra, centered in the sacral chakra, expressing the root, sacral, solar plexus, heart, throat, third eye, crown. And then you go into the solar plexus and you repeat, and you go into the heart and you repeat, and the throat and the third eye and the crown. And so we have these seven layers of seven chakras creating that 49th octave of the electromagnetic spectrum that all colors exist within. We experience the world as an individualized expression of reality, which only you experience. You experience life different from everyone else. Very similar across the board, but still your unique expression. You're this little beautiful diamond-like prism reflecting and interacting with life through your own lens that only you have the power to see through. No one else is going to have the opportunity to experience life in the exact way you do. And that gives your life so much individual power. It's astounding. These chakras are the root notes of the electromagnetic vibration that moves through each of these octaves of energetic expression. It's kind of embodying its own unique quality or quantity or timbre or tone or hue or flavor. And every single second, you are expressing an unbelievably amazing and beautiful orchestra, symphony, masterpiece that you are. And a way I can kind of, well, actually, one of the things I want to say before moving on is I realized, because I can see people's auras, that when you were sitting in your authenticity, when you were speaking your truth, or living with passion, or even being vulnerable, your colors shine. They jump out of you. They become so pastel-y. They become so vibrant. They become so beautiful when you are being the truest you. And that's how you're going to find the people that you can resonate with. Just before I finish up here, I just kind of wanted to give you a little show of what it's kind of like to move through all of the root notes through each of the different octaves. So I'm just going to play a little, you know, major C, not major C scale, but I'm going to play just all of the white notes starting at C, and I'm just going to go up an octave at a time. So this will kind of give you an expression of what it's like to move through the seven layers of each chakra with the root notes in a line here. So I'll give you a little bit of an auditory experience as well. So that's kind of a way to express how we are consistently moving through different layers of energy, making an unbelievably unique creative expression of existence while we interact with reality in a way that only our individual biological collection of unbelievably wonderful vibrating pieces exists. I hope you show your colors and own them. I hope you look at all of your colors with the profound beauty and childlike wonder that they deserve. I hope you find the palettes that make you glow. And I hope you learn to work on your blockages with compassion and with grace. You know, give yourself time and space. And you got to give time and space. Everything has an appropriate moment and everything has a right time. And you can't force that. Things happen. And you need to allow growth to happen as it should. You know, when you are hard on yourself for not moving through your blockages and your traumas and your hang-ups and your difficulties, it's like planting a seed and then staring at it, turning around and shouting, "Why won't you grow already?" It doesn't work like that. You have to move with the flow of the seasons, of the ebbs and the flows, through the different channels, through the different processes of growth. And give yourself the same patience and love you would give to a seed you've planted and want to watch come into fruition so that it can bear delicious fruit for all those folks to share. So thanks again for tuning in. This will be the last of the Chakras and Octaves series. I am not sure if I will be in town next week for Freaky Friday, so this is why I kind of did a two-piece doubleheader here. If I am not around, then I will talk to you guys the following week, and if I am, I will do something else. But I love you guys. Thank you all for tuning in and taking a little bit of time out your day to listen to me ramble about all things mystical, magical, and crazy and insane. I'm going to continue doing this, and I look forward to sharing this journey with you guys. I hope you have an amazing night, weekend, week, month, Gregorian calendar year, lunar year, tropical sidereal year, cosmic year. I just hope you have a great freaking time, no matter what you're doing. I hope your holiday festivities are filled with love and being surrounded by the people you care about and who matter to you the most. Signing off. Take care.